Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young, was so
hello and welcome to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Hope you had a good week and a good weekend. Here we are, Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and at the luxurious Lakeside Home Studio, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are things at the Lakeside Theater?
You know, just getting ready for holidays, wrapping a few presents, you know, joy to the world over here, big guy.
Yeah, well, George, we are oftentimes excellent at adding nothing to anyone's knowledge. But tonight I want to talk about step 10, and then we've got a spectacular guest named Terry who's going to be joining the program, of course, time permitting, because I don't know how interesting we're going to be in the first 10 minutes and 12 seconds.
And I heard Terry is a friend of the great Dave Johnson.
He is.
One of our good friends of Lost Sheep Ministries. What a fabulous guy. And I think we're coming up on Christmas. You brought it up.
I didn't bring
He's
it up.
He's a Santa Claus, isn't he?
Yeah, he plays Santa Claus. For real.
But no, he does.
Oh, I know he does.
And he looks like Santa Claus.
Well, that's why he plays Santa Claus, George.
Thank you. Thanks for getting it down to my level. Yeah, I walked into that. Well, let's get back to the show and do step 10.
Why don't we? Do you know it by heart or do you want me to read it?
No, I think I got a good guess here. Continue to take our personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And Billy, the reason I wanted to talk about it again tonight, I know we have on the past few shows a couple times, is COVID. We're all struggling, and for a lot of us, depending on what state you're listening to, we've got some more lockdowns coming. How does that affect my walk in recovery? Well, for me, and that's where I always go right away, is how does this affect George Fraser?
Mm-hmm.
My health club is closing on this week.
It did close
it
this week.
Friday, yeah. Friday night.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're already on the ornery side.
Yeah, and that's a big part of my walk with the Lord, my act of worship, and my recovery,
mm-hmm.
pleasure replacing endorphins.
Right.
And we're not seeing people we used to see. I'm doing the show from my home studio, which is really a blessing. But that's kind of where I wanted to go with this. And instead of looking at what we can't do, what we don't have, let's look at what we do have. Number one, are you saved? Number two, are you sober? You didn't really do as much on either one of those as you think you did. God did through his son. And he's going to keep you. You've got to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. And I think one of the things, Bill, for me to do, rather than look, okay, I can't work out at the club, what can I do at home? I can't see people I used to see during the week. I can call them.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look at ways to keep doing what we're doing and keep adding to our recovery. But here's the other part. What can I do for others? Because I'm not the only one that's struggling here. Who can you reach out to, maybe in your recovery circle, your Christian circle, that perhaps you haven't talked to, and think about other people that gets us off ourselves? Who do you think might be really struggling with this? Maybe you could go pick up some groceries for them if they're older. Being older myself, I know I'm a lot more freaked out about this than I would be if I was in my 30s or 20s, fair.
Mm-hmm.
And are there some people like that that maybe you could reach out to that you could go do something for? Whenever we get our eyes off ourselves, it makes me feel more grateful to do it. But it takes an effort to do that, Bill, a decision to do it. And then another decision to follow up on the idea. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk to. How are you adjusting during these days?
Well, it's been not too abnormal because the gym was open until Friday. So I was able to, you know, keep working out. I'm able to come into the studio. So work feels pretty normal. You know, online church is sometimes less enjoyable than being around people. And of course, you're completely disconnected from a lot of family and friends, much more disconnected than I want to be. So that's the downside. So it is a little discouraging days, but it's overall, you're just trying to stay focused in prayer, and hopefully you can just get through it.
Yeah.
Thanks
stay
for
positive,
asking.
Positive, test negative, right?
Exactly.
But I think one of the other things to go to for me, Billy, and I love that you're, you know, doing all those things and staying positive.
I'm not staying that positive.
Well, you aren't normally, so just give me some slack here. Like, you and I are the masters of social distancing.
Oh, totally.
This has been great for us. I'll speak for myself. It's gotten me out of a lot of stuff I didn't want to do anyway.
Right.
No graduation parties, no weddings, on and on.
Right.
However, there are people and things we like to do, and you notice things you took for granted, like, oh, I have to go see this person. Now you'd love to. And it really gets us back to, gosh, on our own, it's really hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This recovery and this relationship with Jesus is about relationships. And I used to tell guys, the way to judge how well you're doing in your recovery is how well you're doing in your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good barometer. And, you know, you and I both like a lot of alone time, which is healthy. When recovery people like myself get into trouble is when we isolate. And versus alone time is choosing to have quiet time and reflecting time. Isolating is when you decide to stay away from people, not answer calls, not reach out. And there's a real difference there. One's healthy, one's very unhealthy. And in these times, you've got to make an effort to stay in contact. But knowing that it's going to pass is very helpful. And I've tried to focus on that lately.
Mm-hmm. George, if we look at step 10 a little bit, isn't it basically a pledge you're making to yourself to be monitoring your life with as much honesty and humility as possible?
Oh, I don't know about the humility there, Bill. I haven't gotten that far.
I get it.
It is. But really what it's doing is different from step 4, where we did the moral inventory, is I'm also looking at good things. Okay. There's assets and liabilities. And I want to check to make sure that, okay, am I working my recovery, whatever that is. If you have recovery gatherings, time in the Word, going to church, in a Bible study. My friend Tony and I started an N.T. Wright Bible study last week on the phone on Matthew.
Nice.
And I got done, Bill, and I realized I missed that so much. But are you doing what you need to do? And then, instead of am I doing everything I should do, what didn't I do that I could have done? So there's two ways to look at this. What has God done for me? Am I sober? Am I saved? Do I have some good friendships? Am I eating? Am I sleeping? Do I have a place to stay? All these things. Yes, yes, and yes. When I really get bummed out, it's because I'm focused on what I don't have and I think I should have rather than what I do have.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the N.T. Wright thing because I always thought he'd be too deep for you.
A lot of pictures in this one.
Oh, good. So you've got you've got things to look at. That's good. Well, I know I'm pretty certain we're going to hear an incredible story tonight. And I love stories of what God is doing in the life of anybody, whether they're using drugs or alcohol or whatever addiction they're trying to get free from. And when God offers that hand of freedom and just the release of slavery to sin, it's a beautiful thing. And I look forward to hearing another story tonight on that transformative power. And I know you are too.
And I like how you said that. It's God's story in us, not our story.
Yeah. And you always remind me it's you don't want to, you know, you didn't want to quit. You know, it's if it's left up to you, you don't want to change.
No. Why would I? Everything's perfect over here.
Right.
It's all good here, you know. And I think the magical thing for me to look at and to hear, and I can't wait to hear it in Terry's story, is not only are you ready to give up what you were doing, but you have a willingness to do all the stuff people have asked you to do for years, all of a sudden with a great urgency because you want to get to know God.
Yep. We'll take a little break. We'll be back with our guest, Terry. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you're with us tonight. Once again, Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and at his home studio, George P. Fraser, a man who loves to sit in traffic. That I don't get.
No, just sitting here at the Lakeside Studio, Bill. Yeah, looking forward to this.
Appreciate that. Yeah, we've got a great story tonight. We're going to bring our special guest, Terry, on, time permitting. I think, we've pretty much run out of things to say, so let's bring him on, huh?
Sounds great.
Yeah, Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys.
I'm excited to hear your story. I've heard bits and pieces of it, and it sounds truly amazing. Let's get a little bit of background as to where you grew up and your family church situation and when you kind of dabbled to start using.
Yeah, I grew up in the Minneapolis area. Mom and dad at home. Not too much of a church family when I was younger that I can remember. My parents were divorced when I was 9, and I remember that being a real difficult time for me. I really looked up to my dad, and I remember stories about some things my dad went through. He lost his mother, his father, and his brother all by the time he was 15 to 19. I lost them all to different diseases, cancer, cirrhosis, and some other things, heart attacks. So it was real tough, and I remember my dad always telling me that family's everything, family's everything. And when they got divorced, that was pretty devastating. I thought, why is he leaving? And that was up till about the age of 9. And then I remember having my first drink at the age of 9. I remember my father would ask me to go run and grab a couple of beers for him and a neighbor friend, and they had a bottle opener. I remember opening them and always taking a sip before I'd bring them their beers. And so that was really my first experience with was alcohol.
You know, it's interesting, Terry, because, you're being taught about the strength of family, yet dad is taken off.
Yeah.
That's got to have some conflict going on in your 9-year-old brain.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It was hard. It was, I thought all these years that he would tell me family's everything and them getting divorced and him moving on. And it was devastating. And I remember, I remember the day that mom said he had to go. To this day, I remember it, and it was real hard on me. So I sort of turned to some bad kids, Even at the age of 9 and 10, we moved out to West Bloomington area, and I'm coming from a city atmosphere to a neighborhood in a suburb with kids and parents and that were together and probably well off financially. We weren't, as my mother struggled to, keep afloat with two kids. And I remember her going to work every day and just barely making it, but then hanging out with kids that had, 3-4 cars, had all the cool clothes. And that was pretty hard for me. But that's when I sort of turned to some kids that weren't necessarily doing the right thing. And I was introduced to some more alcohol and marijuana for the first time. So.
And Terry, how old were you when you started to dabble with more alcohol and some marijuana?
That was probably in about 7th or 8th grade, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm thinking that was probably about 14 years old.
Yeah.
That was the junior high era, and that's when I first started experiencing with that.
I think that's when I remember seeing kids in school, 14, 15, with their bags of pot, and I'm going, that's marijuana. Does that sound right? Just about right to you, George?
Yeah, but that age, it seems like it's getting younger, Bill, when we have younger guys on. But that was the time for us, 14, 15, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So were you feeling that you were just kind of not measuring up with the other kids, or you didn't have stuff that they had and you wanted stuff? And was that depressing to you, or what were you thinking?
Yeah, that was for sure. That was I wanted to be one of the cool kids, and I certainly
so did George.
And I
still do, Bill.
Okay, and
you guys are pals right now. I can tell. A lot in common.
I'm yeah, I was definitely trying to be one of the cool kids, and I couldn't be one of the higher end group as far as the new bikes and the new clothes. So I ended up with the lower guys, and that's when we, you know, would get in trouble. I remember taking mom's car out for a ride a couple of times, thinking I was cool, and you know, and then skipping school. Not going to school, not sitting around all day, maybe smoking weed or hanging out. And, you know, mom was at work, and she couldn't really control me as far as she'd be gone before I'd have to be at school, and we'd have to get ourselves up. And so I'd skip school, and she really didn't know too much about it. And that was when I really started leaning into some, you know, chasing women and girls at school and smoking pot.
Mm-hmm. And the joyride with the car, that was before you had a driver's license, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was probably 14, 15. I remember mom's keys laying around, and I decided to take it for a little spin. And I definitely didn't know what I was doing. I was lucky that I didn't crash.
Yeah, you didn't do that, did you, George?
No, it's interesting, though. Most people think you need a license to drive a car, and you actually don't.
Really? I learned something new on this show every time.
Well, you know, he did it, and I think, people do that. But thankfully, God kept you healthy and nothing bad happened, because that can be a game ender right there.
Yeah, no kidding. So, Terry, there's sounds like this happened and continued all through high school. Is that fair?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. I actually, around ninth grade, speaking of crashing cars, in ninth, I think it was maybe 10th grade, my mom married another guy, and I remember I was sort of the black sheep, and my brother and her new husband, they all went to Lake Tahoe and decided to go get out there and get married, and I didn't get invited, but I knew the house was empty, so I went into the house and took their new car and got into an accident with smoking dope and crashed your car, and they came back, and they saw their car was gone. My mom instantly knew who it was, and she came and found me, and I went to jail for auto theft, and I ended up in one of the highest places you could send a juvenile as far as, you know, before like a prison. It was a juvenile center, and I was sent away for 6 months. And this was probably when I was about 16, 17.
So mom and the new husband kind of threw the book at you, and you were prosecuted and went to this facility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I got convicted of auto theft, and they sent me away.
Okay.
And I remember it was a scary thing. As far as, you know, this was the first time I really was locked up and put away, and it was for some months. Matter of fact, I turned I was in the juvenile center from I was 17. I turned 18 while I was in there, and when I got out, I didn't have nowhere for me to go because I was 18. So they had to send me to a halfway house, which was a like adult place where guys that were just getting out of prison. That's where they sent me, and that was a real scary thing at just turning 18 years of age.
Yeah, you're 18, so that is scary. All right, so are you still gravitating towards using, or are you trying to clean up at this point?
No, I got out, and I turned when I got into the halfway house. There was some heavier drugs, and there was a guy that was selling cocaine, and I decided to dabble into some of that to the point where, when I was there for 3 months, me and him moved out and got our own place, and we were selling cocaine. And that's when a real bad situation happened where a drug deal went bad, and I was shot twice in the chest and should have died. I was shot in close range with the .45, and the guy was definitely trying to kill me. And that was the moment that I ended up down in going down to Regent's Hospital. I blacked out. And don't remember nothing from that, but I got to the hospital and heard the stories. The next day was they were shocking my heart, and nothing was working, and they were pretty much given up. And a heart specialist just happened to be there, and he heard the call come through, and he came in and decided to go into my chest and massage my heart. He said there's usually about a 2% or 1% chance that it would even work, but he happened to be there, and he could make that call, and he went and grabbed my heart and pumped it about 8 times, and then it popped. Mm. And I truly believe the day that happened was the day that God touched me, and it was a miracle that I was alive. I just missed my spine, just missed my heart. When I say just missed by like a quarter inch, on both, and then he came up on close range and shot me again and collapsed my lungs and broke some ribs. But it was a day that that I truly believe the Lord touched me.
So Terry, I'm getting the understanding that this surgeon, when you were like almost clinically dead, is able to open you up and physically massage your heart to get it going again.
Yeah, yeah. He told me the story. He was at home in his office, and he said, you know, I just had a inkling. Maybe I should go down and grab some paperwork. You know, he's a heart specialist where he does surgeries and stuff. And he just happened to go down there, he said. And then he heard the call, and he slapped some gloves on and jumped in the ER. And he told me the next day, he says, Terry, I don't know. If I wasn't here, you weren't going to make it. You were done. They've given up, pretty much given up. And I don't even know why I was here. But I did, and I decided to cut your chest open and pumped it, he said, 8 times, and it came back. He said it was just an amazing thing. The people that were in the surgery room and operating room were just amazed. They couldn't believe that it came back after all the work that they were trying to do that didn't work.
Mm. So you come to your senses, and do you think, what is God trying to tell me right now?
Yeah, you know, I didn't, I'll be honest with you, God still, even at that moment, being 18, I still didn't really get the gravity of what just happened. You know, it was almost to the point where 19 and I thought, or 18, I thought, well, man, people trying to kill me and they can't even kill me. I almost felt like I was some kind of untouchable kind of guy now, if you can believe that.
No, I can believe it. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it, George?
Absolutely it does, Bill. I mean, what worse could happen to him?
Yeah, I mean, guy tries to gun you down with a .45 and you survive. So, you know, things are good. There's more time I have ahead of me.
Yeah, I'm on a roll here.
Right.
I'm indestructible. Let's go.
That's exactly. I was looking for that, sense of somebody. I wanted to be somebody. And I certainly, in the drug game, I being shot, you know, that was, hey, man, I got shot and they couldn't kill me. And that was sort of my attitude. Even coming out, I remember my father, when I got out of the hospital, he took me home and I had, I don't know how many stitches, 120 some stitches in my chest. And I even taking medication or taking pain pills for the pain. I even just 3 weeks out, I decided that I had some cocaine still in the dresser and I sniff some cocaine just after somebody just massaged my heart, if you can believe that.
Wow. All right, we need to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George, our special guest Terry. We'll be right back. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we're talking to Terry tonight. Unbelievable story so far, George. I don't even know where to go from here.
No, can't wait to hear the rest.
Yeah. So, Terry, you're 18. You survived a couple of gunshot wounds. Surgeon opened your chest, massaged your heart, saved your life, brought you back. Tell me that you then decided you were going to just be done using.
I definitely was not going to be done using. I like I say, I went on after that and thought I was a miracle man, and I thought I went into the drug game probably even heavier.
Okay.
But I met my wife. I met my wife of 32 years now today, but she was pregnant. I got shot, and I couldn't believe that after I got shot, I heard she was pregnant. And I would have never been able to see my son today, or things would have been a lot different for Christopher. So we got married, or we got married and got together, and we had another child 2 years later. We're young parents, and I wasn't ready to settle down by any means and get a job and function correctly. I still was running the streets and saying I was a dad, but I wasn't a dad. I was there maybe physically, but I wasn't there mentally. That's for sure. I wanted to party and be with my friends and roam the streets. And so that's the lifestyle that I lived. I lived that in and out of jail. I had some domestic assaults, fighting with the wife, went to jail for those, two or three of those. I went to jail for a check forgery. You know, just that whole game, that whole lifestyle that when you're involved in drugs and committing crimes to maybe get high. And at this time, I was still dabbling in cocaine and methamphetamines and drinking, all three of them from the time I was, you know, my 20s up until I was 35, maybe. That whole thing, I was just in and out of jail, maybe 90 days here, probation. They give me probation for 2.5 years. And I would just run. They let me out of jail, and I'd say sort of this thing, catch me if you can. And so they'd catch me, and I'd do 30 more days. And they'd catch me and do 30 more days. And by the time, the third time they'd catch you, well, your time was up, and I was off probation. You just sort of did your time.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Kind of the cost of doing business, Bill. You just keep going.
I've heard that. That you weren't necessarily afraid to sit for 30 days if you had to, right?
No, not at all. That wasn't, it really wasn't a big deal. I just sort of, I guess there's the way we used to say it, it's part of the game. You know, you want to be in the game, this is part of the game. You go to jail for a little while, you take your lumps. And I was, you know, this whole time I was no good to my wife. I was cheating and running and just the drug use in and out. You know, I'd have a period where I went on a meth run for 2 or 3 months, and then I would go on a cocaine run, and all this time I'd be drinking. You know, you'd have to drink to sort of come down off the cocaine and the meth, and the alcohol was really, you know, that was like everyday thing for years on end. And to this day I don't know how I survived drinking vodka and stuff the way I did.
So you've got really no clarity apart from using. I mean, every day you're involved in using, so you have no mental, emotional, spiritual clarity at this point, do you?
None at all. Yeah. None at all. I started, as far as spiritually, I started, I saw things growing up in the midst of this. There were things that God was talking to me about. I had some really strange things that I'd see or somebody would say, and I just knew. I guess at the moment, I didn't know it was God, but looking back now, it was God talking to me in so many different ways. I remember one time I was drawn. The Pope, they were trying to... The Pope, they needed a new one, and their smoke was coming out of the top of the church, and it'd be like a white smoke, and they had to change smoke. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, I am.
Okay, well, that cross up there, I remember staring at that cross for a day and a half where I just couldn't take my eyes off of it. And I was just like, why is this? Why am I so drawn to this cross? And I know now, but at the time I was just like, oh, God, something's speaking to me. And I'd go into churches, you know, for a wedding, and the crosses and Jesus would just look so bright and so deep colored. I was like, I didn't know what was going on. You know, I guess I just, I knew that something was happening, and he was talking to me in so many different ways, and things would look different. And I didn't know at the time. I didn't know. I was confused. And, definitely know I needed a change in life, that's for sure.
But God sounds like he's breaking through the fog. He's getting your attention in a way that is real to you, and you don't know quite what it is, but he has your attention.
Definitely. Has my attention. And I guess looking back, you know, I just that day that guy touched my heart, something happened. He turned my heart. And I truly believe that to this day, that touch from that doctor was from God himself to keep me alive for a reason. And I know, you know, I know today, but at the time I was really confused and didn't know what was going on in my life. But I knew that there was something better. And I know people used to say, Terry, you got a good heart. Even in the midst of my darkness and my drug use, there was something about me that they would be drawn to. My wife said, Terry, I always knew you had a great heart. I knew you had a heart for people. You had a softness. It was this outer edge stuff that God had to take these layers off me through the years. And if it was going to jail, saving my life that way, if it was, there were so many different ways that he tried to get my attention.
So how long did you keep doing this, and what happened to change it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How long did you keep on this road, in and out of jail and running and gunning? And then what happened to change it?
Okay, well, I definitely, I caught a drug case. I was selling methamphetamines, and I was doing this for, I don't know, off and on for a year and a half, using and doing. And I remember one night I was going to do a drug deal, and I get into the car, I meet this guy, and I am counting some money, and I look up, and I see this drug-free school zone area. I was parked outside of school, and that sign looked like it was 30 by 30, and it just touched me, and I went, after the deal, I went back home, and I said, I'm done. I have to stop. God was talking to me right there through that sign. I went home and told the wife that I'm done. I can't do this no more, and the very next day I owed somebody some drugs or something, and I went to go meet him, give him the drugs. And when I gave him the drugs, and I had one more package to drop off, and the cops pulled me over, and I ended up in jail. I ended up in jail for a second degree possession and sales charge, and I was looking at 117 months.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah. At this time, I racked up enough points where I was considered a three-time felon, and there was a mandatory minimum in this bracket where for the drug conviction I was looking at 117 months. And
wow.
And so when I was in jail, a lady came in from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and I thought, well, these guys are talking about it, and I'm like, that they're not going to give me anything like that, you know. There's no way. I'm a mandatory minimum. Well, all of a sudden, one day when I was in my jail cell, I come out and there's a Bible sitting right out in front of my door. I picked the Bible up and brought it to my room, and I got on my hands and knees. And at this time, nobody was going to get me out of this one. There was no bail. There was no nothing. And I cried out to God, and I said, Lord, if you're real, please make yourself real to me. And I remember this heat and this fire just come into my room. It got so warm in there, and I didn't know. It was almost like I was hallucinating to the point where I was sweating and it was getting dizzy, and the spirit was just thick through there. And I didn't know what was going on at the time, but God was making himself real to me. And I remember that Bible. When I picked that Bible up and I cried out to him, I opened it up and I couldn't put it down, guys. I was in the county jail for 12 and a half months. And I couldn't put that Bible down. I just kept reading and reading and reading it. And I go to my room and cry, and I didn't understand why I was crying. Well, God put people in my life, in the jail ministries and these programs that I was in there. We go to Bible studies, and I'd start to learn what God was doing to me, cleansing my heart. I remember that one guy said, go back and read some more. You don't have to understand right now. Just let him cleanse your heart. So that was my first encounter, you know, crying out in a jail cell.
Wow. I've heard that story before, and that's a fantastic story because, George, you have said many times that the Department of Corrections can be one of the greatest evangelistic tools out there.
Yeah, I think it is, Bill. And I think there's a couple reasons. Number one, you really get somebody's attention. You got time to think about how well this is working for you, and you don't have any hope. And then somebody comes in and offers you some hope. You're hungry for that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I love the fact, Terry, that the minute you picked up the Bible for the next 12 or 13 months, you couldn't put it down.
Yeah, people would come up to me, guys, and say, hey, why are you so calm? You're looking at 117 months. Why are you just calm? And I say, you know, I just read this book. I just keep reading, and everything's going to be okay. And at this time, I felt God telling me, here's some steps. Here's some things to do. So I did some things while I was in jail. I did go to the Bible studies. I did get my GED. I did learn. I went to chemical dependency programs. I opened myself up to anything and everything, parenting classes. God was telling me to do these. In the midst of that, I was praying to him. And boy, was their prayers being answered for my children, my wife and children. I mean, really, my wife is just the strongest person I ever known. She kept this family together. And you know, she knew my heart, and she just wanted God to change it. And even looking at all this time, she stuck together or kept the kids together and worked and had a home. And while I was in jail, and she did that throughout my 30 years of marriage, you know, kept it together. And but being in jail, I went to the day of sentencing. I remember going up in front of that judge, and the judge looked at me. Let me go back a second here. The attorney came to me and said, Terry, it's not looking good. You're looking at prison, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And then he comes back 2 minutes later and says, Terry, the judge wants to see you last. I don't know what's going on, but she wants to see you last. And there in the cell, I'm going, God's doing his thing. He's making some things happen here. And so I get in front of the judge, and she looks at me and says, I don't know why I'm not sending you to prison, but you're going to the Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. And if you ever come back in front of me, it's going to be a lot different. You're going to prison.
Wow.
And that day, I just trusted God, and I heard him throughout those 12 months that I wasn't going, and I believed it, and it happened.
Yeah. We need to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Our guest Terry is telling an amazing story after a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George. We've got Terry as our guest tonight. And George, I've heard this story before where you're facing all this time in prison, and then the judge says, I'm giving you one more chance. Pretty powerful.
You know, that is, obviously. I wanted to go back a little before that, though, Bill, where even though he's looking at, what, 117 months, and by my poor math, that's almost 10 years, right? He's got a real peace about him, and he knows God has him. And we hear that over and over. We've heard so many guys say when they're in the back of the squad car with the cuffs on, they knew everything was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the peace of God that passes all understanding is happening here. It's great. Even he was even ready to go do the time. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I, George, that point you made is I've heard that many times. When you're in the back of the squad car with the cuffs on, there's a sense of relief. It's like, I'm done running now. Or you're going to sit in jail for a while or prison. You go, I'm done being this person. And there's some kind of wonderful freedom in that, despite the fact you're locked up. Terry, is there any truth to that?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah, I definitely, you know, running the streets like that, and when you can just, you know, even when you think you're getting rest, you're really not, guys. You're looking over your shoulder all the time. It's just a terrible way to live. And I definitely, there was a relief. You know, there was a lot of different emotions running through, you know, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to get home? You know, what's your life going to look like in, you know, in some years now? And your mind really definitely goes in a lot of different directions. But one thing is, like, finally I can rest.
Yeah.
And jail can give that to you.
Yeah. So, Terry, as Jesus is transforming your life and you're reading his word in jail, what are you starting to think? What is your self-talk? What are you starting to say to yourself about who you are and who you're becoming?
Oh, I definitely knew Jesus was telling me that what the world says of me, I'm a felon, a drug addict, I'm no good, these kinds of things. Jesus was telling me that I wasn't, that I was the Son of God, that I was a child of the Most High, and I believe that. I started really believing that I was loved, and loved in a way that I've looked for years. You know, my mom could give me a certain love, my dad could, but the love that I was feeling while I was in jail, I'd never felt before.
Hmm.
That's neat.
Yeah.
You got a purpose, you're loved, this is going to be okay. You stop running.
Yep. Yeah, I just felt like he was telling me that there's a better life, and I got things for you to do, and just stay calm, and we'll I'm with you, and that was something that I felt. And when I got over to Teen Challenge, that was where the learning started, the book work, the getting deeper, the relationship, and some of the people that would come on stage, and some of the pastors over there that was teaching me is really where I started to grow with Christ. I had people that God put in front of me that were just amazing people. And Dave Johnson, Lost Sheep Ministries, he came in there, and just his beautiful work he did. I see these people that were just like me at one time, and now they're running programs, and they were doing these great things, and I wanted a part of that. And that was me being 18 challenged for the next 13 months, not going to prison. They sent me there, and that's really where I got to grow with my relationship with Christ.
That's just fantastic. So tell me what recovery is like for you now. What are your daily disciplines? What do you do to keep your mind fixed on the Lord? And how do you interact with you know, other people to keep your recovery strong?
Yeah, you know, that was the thing of being at Teen Challenge. They really give you the opportunity to meet some people that are trying to do the same thing. You know, you'd come in, and there's groups of guys that you just knew that were doing good things, and you wanted to be a part of that. So I got a group of guys that I just hung out with. We played softball. We did this and stuff while I was there. But outside, once I got outside there, we kept those relationships. And that was important, to just really get new guys in your life and get rid of all the old ones. And that's what I did. And that's what really kept me, you know, going. I would go to church. I would go to these recovery groups. And that's what, you know, kept me sober. I definitely, even after leaving Teen Challenge, guys, I have to admit, I veered off at times, a couple, three, four times. Matter of fact, I veered off and turned back to my old ways as far as drinking and feeling like, you know, I could go back and things are okay. You know, like I had a comfort for a while, and then I felt like, oh, you know, maybe I could have one beer. and maybe I could have this. And the battle was, in my mind there was hard, but I just would reach back to God, and I remember God, you know, telling me, stay with me, stay with me. And my daily routine was, you know, reading scripture, talking to guys, being connected, you know, new hobbies. I'm a fisherman by I just love to fish, and God's blessed me with a new boat this year. And I got to take guys out and really give back. I've done talks with jail ministry, like fundraisers. I'm still connected with Teen Challenge, and that's how I'm doing it now. I'm just staying connected, staying in that word, and having a wife that's on the same level as I am is what a blessing that is. To when I do get out of line, she helps straighten me out a little bit, guys.
So, you know, I think it's real important, Bill, that sometimes, most of the time, it's not a straight line from addiction to continual recovery. Mm-hmm. And what happens is we become unwilling to do what we're doing because we don't think we need to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then we're reminded that we do. And I'm always so grateful that God allows people like me to come back after we stub our toe. That you don't stay out there, you get back. And that's called repenting. And the quicker you do it, the better.
Yes, yes. I can't agree with you more there on that. You know, you say stub your toe, and I would. I'd stub my toe, and I just knew that God was still right there. He didn't, you know, give up on me. I made a mistake, and I go back, and I'd say, hey, I screwed up here. How can we get back on the path? And he'd put people into my life that would help me get back on that path. And that was the amazing thing that I God had people in my life. He always kept people in my life, and so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I think Terry, sometimes we confuse serenity with boredom because we've never, you know, been out of that chaos. And what happens is, once you go back and have that drink or a toke or whatever, the noise in your head starts right away. You know, the voices, the worry, the I got to lie, I got to do that. And you realize what you had was not boredom. You had peace of mind, and you want to get that back.
Correct. Correct. So much, yeah. And just one other way, too, guys, is that God has put it on my heart to go out and help people. And I even at work, I talk to my buddy Aaron and guys on my belt. I work at a package company, and the opportunity I give to talk about what Jesus has done in my life, like I'm doing today, give a testimony and share scripture is just an awesome thing. And that's what God has done too, to also keep me on straight and narrow.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Terry, when you had those little short relapses, obviously you must have, looking back, have felt that God once again rescued you quickly. But also, I'm curious, was those episodes connected at all to any former people from your past?
No, I think we touched on it a little bit. It was like I was bored, and I thought that I was okay. I thought, you know, I could handle a beer,
okay.
Which we know I can't. I can't handle one. That just makes me mad. One would make me mad. You know, I would need 14, 15, and I no.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because, you know, you've got a lifestyle and you've got game and you've got street sense and you have to completely cut all of those ties off, and that probably doesn't happen overnight, or does it?
No, you know, it didn't for me, but I tell you what, the internet is a real issue with trying to get rid of friends. You can connect to people so easily nowadays. It's not as easy as it used to be just to give a phone number or change your address or change your, you know, the neighborhoods. It definitely is. It's easy to connect with people. So I just had to tell myself that I can't call any of these. I can't be friends with some of these people, even though we thought we were friends. I had to disconnect from all of them. And I really, that was something that Pastor Rich over at Teen Challenge would tell me. You got to start a new path. You got to start a new mind. You got to think differently. And getting rid of everybody was the biggest one. And I accomplished that.
That's fantastic. So if you were to be in front of a group of high school kids right now and you could speak to them, what would be the message you'd want to give them?
Oh boy, high school kids. You know, I have kids that have been in high school. I in all honesty right now, I have a son that's struggling with an addiction. He lost his his daughter, my granddaughter, of cancer when she was two.
I'm so sorry, Terry.
Yeah, it was tough. It was one of those moments that I definitely thought for my recovery, I thought I was going to go into the deep end. And I really think people were looking at me to say, oh, Terry's going to fold on this one. You know, Terry's going to fold on this one. And I have a son that's battling addiction. And, you know, I guess if I was in front of some people, I would just say, you know, I just would say, hey, don't do it. It's just not worth it, guys. I know you want to escape something and escape some feelings and some depression that you have, but boy, if you knew what the end result would be, you I think you'd think twice.
That is so true. That's a lot of heartbreak to lose a grandchild. I'm so sorry about that, and I'm sorry your son is. Got some addiction concerns right now, but I'm glad you're being the available dad, that they're there to help him and pray for him and be alongside him.
Yeah, it's really hard, guys, is that the fact that I've gone through addiction and I know what he's battling, and some days I feel like I can't really help him. You know, I may be doing it the wrong way, or he's not acceptable from me. I don't know, because of the things that I probably put him through when he was a child, the things that he's seen me going to jail, the mean being messed up on drugs, not coming home for weeks. He saw those things. And then for me to now come that I've gotten clean and to try to help him, he just isn't open, guys. So my prayer for him every day was that he just opens up and lets me give him some direction. And slowly that's happening. But him losing his only daughter, it's a tough one for him to swallow, and I'm not sure, you know, exactly how he's feeling even at this moment, guys.
Yeah, well, we will pray for him and continue to pray for you. And, amazing that your wife has been so incredibly supportive and loving through all these years.
Yes.
And what a testimony to the person that God placed in your life to love you the way she did and the way she is.
Yeah, she is my. She is my everything here, you know, Christ first and then my wife. And it's working out, guys. It's working out.
I can hear that. Mm-hmm. So we're a little out of time, but this has been a great chance to meet you and hear your story. Being an 18-year-old kid who got shot and whose life was saved by the surgeon who opened up his chest and massaged his heart by hand. I don't hear that story every day, George.
No, and it's great. You know, when you talk to these kids, And with your son, you're showing them that God can and will if we seek him.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just keep doing that. You know, sometimes the results are 5 years down the road, Terry, but just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. All right. Terry, thanks so much for being a great guest. And that wraps up another award-winning show of Real Recovery. Thanks for listening and supporting Faith Radio. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.